for those that weren't here yesterday, we got ahead of schedule a little bit, and we ended up taking the SAW-SARC report on ocean quahog, surf clam, and the skate complex. So if anyone's here for that presentation today, we did it yesterday. And you can talk to myself or Jim Weinberg at one of the breaks. If you had a specific question, we can get you a copy of the report as well. So for today, that leaves the Research Steering Committee report, which is tab 8. And then the rest of the day is dedicated to ground fish. And before I get going, does anyone have any comments or anything they need to say? Okay, Paul Howard.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This morning, Karen mentioned to me that it's Juanita's birthday, and it's a very big birthday. Karen mentioned to me that she's going to need some cheering up because she's 40 today, so happy birthday.
Dr. Jim, did you have something?
Yeah, it's hard to follow that, but I want you to switch over to thinking about what skates eat for a minute. And yesterday, Dave Pierce asked me what their main diet is, and I wasn't ready to answer, but I looked it up this morning, and just very qualitatively, they're mostly benthivores, which mean they eat crabs and clams. They do also, some of the larger skates also eat some fish, mainly small pelagics and some squids. So the details will be in the report.
For a minute there, I thought you were going to say they're spinophores. Dr. Dog. All right, Dave Gaethl, are you ready for your report?
Yeah, after the birthday song, I'm not going to quit my day job to become a singer. I'd like to call everybody's attention to the information that's under tab 8 for the Research Steering Committee. The committee met on January 17th to evaluate a number of proposals and deal with a number of issues. Basically, quickly list off what's in your binder. There's a meeting summary. The final reports are there. There's our policy on research review. There's a summary of the industry-based survey project reviews. There's a series of correspondence concerning requests for peer reviews of the study fleet, and another letter addressing requests for review of information available concerning the impacts of fishing on stocks during peak spawning periods, and a correspondence from Nero concerning the list of projects recommended for funding through the Council Scallop and Monkfish Research Set-Aside programs. So you'll have plenty to keep your eyes busy. Mostly we'll be working off the meeting summary document, which is document number one. Try and quickly run through this for you. The first thing I'd like to announce is that we did welcome a number of new people to the Research Steering Committee at our last meeting. Dr. Mike Armstrong from Massachusetts, Gib Brogan from Oceania, Dave Preble from the Council, and Kurt Rice, who is a fisherman from Portland, Maine. So we had a number of new eyes working on this project. We advised them of how the Research Steering Committee operates and advised them to visit their optometrist at once because they were going to have to, you know, keep up on their eyeglass prescriptions. With that, we'll move into the projects that we offered final reviews on. The first one was a correlation of silver hake abundance with bottom water temperature in the Mid-Atlantic Bight and stock identification using microsatellite DNA, which was submitted by Dr. William Fole. I'm not going to spend a lot of time describing these projects, but basically this was a project to look at changes in perhaps bottom water temperature throughout the range of silver hake to see if that could have an effect on where the stocks were locating, and also a collection of DNA from Silver Hake over pretty much the range of the species from the Scotian shelf down to Virginia. And as far as the results, basically they found approximately a 1 degree centigrade change in bottom water temperature over the course of the study. This was not considered to be significant. It was well within the range of what Silver Hake can tolerate. And as far as the DNA work, they analyzed only one loci, which is basically, let's say, one gene. And that was found to be inadequate for determining whether these were separate stocks. They were provided with technical feedback, went back and reworked their information, spent quite a bit of time on it, but ultimately could not draw any valid conclusions from the DNA. So in that aspect, the program was not successful. The information is on file and will be forwarded to the appropriate technical committees. The second one was the Eastern Gulf of Maine inshore community-based tagging of Atlantic cod. This was conducted off the eastern Maine coast as part of our larger tagging program. Basically, this was a technical report, how many fish they tagged, how they tagged them. We don't need to spend a lot of time on it. It was judged that the tagging procedures were adequate. They tagged approximately 2,250 fish. They did have encounter some problems. As you all know, eastern Maine is very thick with fixed gear, so they were unable to use mobile gear to target the codfish. They caught most of them on hook and line, and they encountered the problems you would expect to encounter when trying to use hook and line to capture fish. Things such as large concentrations of dogfish that beat the cod to the hook. They were weather-dependent boats, small boats, and they basically could only tag the fish in the summer when they were present. But nonetheless, they tagged 2,500 fish. That data is part of the Gulf of Maine Research Institute's database and will be continued to be worked on from there. The third one we went over was a comparison of environmental contaminants on Georges Bank and Stellwagen Bank, submitted by Dr. Emily Monison and David Lincoln and 15 boats from Gloucester that actually collected the fish. This was an interesting study. It was spurred by fishermen's concerns over potential contamination of fishing grounds and the results that might have on fish stocks. The study found relatively low concentrations of PCBs in Georges Bank fish compared with earlier work conducted in the mid-1970s, and relatively low contaminations of what would be considered heavy metals and assortment of organic chemicals overall, which I think is good news for all of us. The only thing they did note was an increase in, I think it was cadmium, and they felt that warranted further study. Cadmium, for those of you who don't know, is a relatively heavy metal, has some toxic issues associated with it. The RSC members agreed with the positive reviews conducted by the Northeast Consortium. Comments were made that in some cases, and perhaps in this instance, fishing vessels make less than optimal platforms for certain types of research minus the collaborative value. And the reason for that is that this requires a relatively delicate chemical analysis. Samples have to be stabilized in certain ways. And this was tough for the people to do on the boats. It was also noted that despite that the science might be better served by alternative platforms, this subject matter of this project might be associated with such a high degree of controversy that it is best undertaken as a collaborative project involving both scientific and industry partners. I think this is a very important point to make. Fishermen, I know personally I am always concerned about pollution on the grounds. And, when you come in and report that pollution hasn't changed significantly in 20 years, that's a pretty controversial finding. And having industry partners there side by side with the people collecting the information, I think is a very positive way to guarantee that this message gets out. Let me move on here. I got to go through my notes. See here. Okay, the fourth project we reviewed was sea trials to assess knotless cod end mesh selectivity, submitted to the Northeast Consortium by Dana Morse from Maine Sea Grant and Kilo Peekham from Teviot, Maine, and a couple of additional fishermen from Maine as industry partners. Basically, this was a program to look at, for those of you who are not familiar with withdrawal netting, knotless netting, which is a woven mesh, has no knot, and the traditional knotted cod end, which is, you know, has that big knot at every corner. And what they were trying to do is see if it changed selectivity in any way, you know, if it enhanced escapement or anything like that. And while the scope of the project was relatively narrow, it didn't include a great number of tows or a very high capture rate, it should best be considered as a pilot project. And basically what it appeared to show is that there was no difference between the knotted and the knotless in terms of escapement. And the reason we say appears to show that is that as part of the study, they accurately measured the two cod ends and found that they weren't exactly the same. This has been an ongoing problem with research. There is no standardization in mesh. One guy's 6.5 turns out to be 6.57. Another guy's 6.5 turns out to be 6.48 or something. It's very difficult for principal investigators to get twine that is exactly the same size. And it's also a problem for the industry, as you've heard quite frequently. So this project, basically, we recommended be considered as a pilot and that the findings from it would not be useful for management at this time without further study. But at least the indications are that it's... doesn't change selectivity from the limited number of tows that were available to it. Okay. The next one is the industry-based survey and the Gulf of Maine pilot study. This was a study conducted by the Mass Division of Marine Fisheries. It was it's a very large study. It involves a number of boats over a wide geographic range over a number of years. And rather than read you the results of the peer review, which are listed here, is I think it's about 10 bullets. I'll just say that I suggest that you read them. This was a well-done study. The RSC fully agreed with the findings of the external peer review. And the RSC further identified several important findings from the committee's perspective. The most significant one, I believe, to the committee was that the fishing industry selected stations produced results similar to the random stratified stations. And I think, you know, this was, if nothing else had been done in this study, just finding that is very important because the industry for years has felt that the random stratified design did not adequately sample the fish. And one of the goals of this project was to go out and say, okay, you pick a station and we'll use the computer to pick a station. And as I said, the results showed quite clearly that, over the length of the project and over the variety of seasons that were sampled, that it ended up coming out virtually the same. Second, that a successfully run IBS can produce useful science, as discussed in the peer review. It was noted by folks from the Science Center that this information in this industry-based study will be used in the upcoming GARM. It produced literally a ton of information. Some of the information, actually quite a bit of the information, hasn't been analyzed yet. That's how much there is. They'll actually be looking for people to help with the analysis of some of the great deal of information that was collected, things such as age links, otoliths, just the basic stuff you collect during a biological cruise. If the survey continues, and given that there are redundancies in the project relative to information from industry-selected stations and the random stratified results, the design may need to be revised to accommodate new management-related research questions and or priorities and or gaps in existing survey coverage of council-managed species. Basically, we had quite a long discussion about where do we go from here. And that discussion was ultimately inconclusive for several reasons. The first is that, as you all know, we don't know what the budget is yet. So we don't know what money is going to be available. So we don't really know what we can do. We also are just learning, as we learned yesterday, of the limitations that in strata that may be imposed by the advent of the new research vessel. I mean, we may have to retarget some of these studies to more intensively sample the near shore strata that may not be able to be sampled now because of the draft issue. Let me see here if I have anything else on that. The report is on file with NOAA Fisheries and the council, and will be particularly directed to the council's ground fish and other committees and the related plan development teams for use as appropriate. As I said before, we did spend a lot of time discussing where do we go from here. We're going to discuss it again at our next meeting. Hopefully by then we'll know what the budget is and what money may be available. The committee's strategy to develop advice on the direction of industry-based survey efforts was to answer several questions, determine whether the current surveys need to continue, whether the focus of efforts should fill spatial gaps in the current state and federal surveys, and or those that will occur as a result of operation of the new fishing survey vessel Bigelow, consider any new objectives, and make comments on any necessary survey redesign. It was agreed that the answers to these questions would not be available until the next committee meeting, although members emphasized that decisions on these matters must be made this year for implementation next year. So we're very aware of the fact that if the survey is to continue, that we're going to have to, as soon as the budget is available, make these decisions and move ahead. Finally, to prepare for a fuller discussion at the next meeting, the committee agreed to communicate with the Trawl Survey Advisory Committee to determine unanswered questions about the Bigelow survey capabilities and coverage. I think you heard those were answered yesterday. I'm not sure we have to do that anymore. I mean, it was pretty clearly laid out what areas they will not be able to survey based on their draft considerations, and we'll try to deal with that at the next meeting. And I think I'll stop there for a second and ask if anybody has any questions.
Any questions? Dr. Pierce?
Not so much questions. I just have some comments to make regarding the COD IBS work. So when it's appropriate to make those comments, I'd appreciate that opportunity, Mr. Chairman.
Why don't you go ahead, Dave?
All right. Thank you. I greatly appreciate the efforts by the Research Steering Committee to take a look at the COD industry-based survey. They did a fine job. The survey, by the way, was not just a survey done by the Division of Marine Fisheries. Even though our name is on the report, I need to highlight the fact that, this was a major effort that actually was planned back in the late 1990s, in other words, 1999, going into 2000, 2001. And it was the result, actually, of a partnership that was undertaken by the division with other states, notably the state of Maine, New Hampshire to some extent, but certainly the state of Maine, with the National Marine Fisheries Service, and most importantly, with the commercial fishermen. And it resulted in this report implementing an industry-based survey pilot fleet in New England. A tremendous amount of work went into the development of this particular document, and now it's resulted in this particular report, which, if you haven't seen, I encourage you to do so because it's a great piece of work. There are computer disks in here that will enable you to better appreciate what's in here and, of course, to carry it around with ease. This particular program, the survey, was designed for success. This wasn't sort of a haphazard thing. It was designed for success, and the success has happened, largely because of the work by the fishermen themselves and those who were on board the boats doing all the hard work. I, of course, am one of the principal investigators, but I had the easy job. You know, back in the office, I went out once in a while, but the fishermen and those on the water and those who analyzed the information, you know, they're the ones who made it a success. And this survey was initiated because of our concern about Gulf of Maine cod, the assessment for Gulf of Maine cod. Most of us remember that not too long ago, Gulf of Maine cod was nearing a collapse. And there was a great deal of concern about the assessment for Gulf of Maine cod. Was it accurate? How inaccurate was it? Could it be more precise? So recognizing that, we all worked together to develop another database, another survey, to help us increase the robustness of the assessment itself to be a supplement. So we feel that it's gone a long way towards putting us in a position where we can actually improve the credibility of the assessments, and that's going to be paramount as we move forward with the development of this next amendment. Confidence that we know what's going on, or at least we have a better handle on what's happening with Gulf of Maine cod. Now, the National Marine Fisheries Service has touted this survey, understandably so, because of its success and their involvement in it, their great role in planning for the survey. And those of you who have seen this disc, this DVD, it profiles the program as well as, of course, the other cooperative research programs that have been successful. It's also described, of course, in this flyer, and we're very grateful for that. Now we've had a peer review, and the peer review has produced some excellent results. We've gotten very high marks. I'm not going to review the conclusions. You've all got those listed out, I believe, in the report provided by the Research Steering Committee. So the peer review has given us the high marks, and once again, we kind of expected that because of all the preparation that went into it. I'm very pleased to hear that the information that we've acquired so far from this intensive survey, November through May, many, many stations, something like 1,200 stations a year, that this information will be used to the extent that it can be used in the next go-around for assessments, certainly for Gulf of Maine cod. And I'm optimistic that the information will also be useful for some of the assessments for other groundfish species in the Gulf of Maine. And this wasn't a survey that just caught cod. Obviously, it caught many different species. Haddock, I think if you look at the haddock data, you'll find that to be very fascinating, especially the distribution of haddock November through May in the Gulf of Maine, you know, by season, you know, by depth strata. That'll be very useful information. By the way, this information, cod specifically, has already helped the Division of Marine Fisheries make some important management decisions, and that is establish the cod conservation zone in Massachusetts Bay, a seasonal closure to protect spawning codfish. I've talked to some of the plan development team members regarding this database and how useful it will be, and of course I've talked with Steve Correa, a member of my staff, to ask him how will this information be used. He's already given me a number of ideas to how it's going to be used, how it might be used, and this will, of course, be further pursued with the plan development team. If we go into area-based management schemes, you know, allocating TACs to fine scale areas, the cod IBS work, the database, will be particularly useful in evaluating those particular proposals. The 2008 cod assessment, he anticipates that the IBS work will be very useful regarding that assessment, especially age composition, you know, the 2003 year class, what's happening with that year class. That's key for the future of the Gulf of Maine resource. Much of our optimism for Gulf of Maine cod has come about because of that 2003 year class. So he's got other things as well, other ideas that he's offered up, and those will be further aired with the plan development team. So this council can be assured that this database will be extremely useful as we move forward with this amendment. Once again, a database collected using the expertise and the efforts of the commercial fishing industry. I expect that we'll be scaling back the survey consistent with peer review recommendations, in particular to reduce the cost, scaling it back without jeopardizing the objectives of the survey as they currently are defined. We'll probably revise the objectives, consistent again with the peer review. Good advice provided by the peer review. We hope that we'll be continuing the survey, scaled back, let's say, this coming year, starts November, goes through May. Readily appreciate the budgetary problems of the National Marine Fisheries Service. The research cooperative research program is stressed. It's got a lot of good proposals out there for work to be done. We're hopeful again that it will continue scale back this November through May so we can have an additional year of data that will feed into our discussions, especially our assessment discussions for the next amendment to the groundfish plan. So with all that said, I'm very encouraged. I've been pleased to be involved in this survey work. I've been very happy to deal with my counterparts and with the other states and certainly with the National Marine Fisheries Service to make this a success. It's a prototype. It's an example of how an industry-based survey can work and should work. The objectives were met. And now we'll just see how it all unfolds in terms of how the database is used, how it's applied for our next go-around with management of groundfish, and, of course, a better understanding of not just codfish but other groundfish in the Gulf of Maine. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that opportunity to elaborate a bit on this excellent piece of research, which, again, was a wonderful cooperative effort, state, federal, and industry. And still is, by the way, because the survey is still underway. It's February. We're in the the current year of survey for November 06 through May 07.
Thank you, Dr. Pierce. Phil Roll.
Everything he just said. I don't know if I agree with what I heard yesterday was the stratus. I mean, you're going to be defined by one and a half. And it wasn't really... I don't know if it was really that specific, so I recommend that the letter still go. The reason I say that is the concept or the original plan for the Trawl Survey Committee was to redesign the survey, not just the gear. The whole survey was supposed to be on the table and to be looked at, so, I mean, that's part of our upcoming job going forward, so I recommend the letter still go forward.
Anyone else? Okay, David.
Okay. Let's see here. Next, we had a discussion of a letter from Dr. Nancy Thompson from the Science Center concerning peer review of the study fleet program. Again, this is another big program that we've been involved in, seeking clarification on what we wanted to review, whether it was the, I guess you call it the technical aspects of this, the computer programming, the all that kind of stuff, or the actual usefulness of the information that's gathered and how it might be used. And we responded that we would only be really interested in confirming the precision of the data and how it might be used, and that will be communicated accordingly. We also had a discussion of the other industry-based survey, which is the state of Rhode Island's Yellowtail Southern New England Flounder Survey. That's also up for peer review. We did communicate to the Science Center that if possible, we would hope to get the same reviewers, first of all, because they did quite a good job, and second of all, because then they could compare and contrast the two studies and offer us any insights as to things that, might be very positive from one that could be applied to another. And that has gone forward. Let's see here. We also had a discussion about the anonymity of reviewers. This is an ongoing concern. People, just as fishermen take fishing quite seriously, scientists take science quite seriously. And, if somebody is harsh on a project, there's generally some degree of anonymity so that your views aren't compromised. What we concluded was that we really don't care about having the people's names. We don't, we're not interested in knowing the names of the reviewers, but we would like to have access to the reviewers should questions arise through the staff, and that seemed like a reasonable compromise. As far as approach to develop and research priorities in 2007, we had a little bit of a discussion about it. We'd like for people to think about how research priorities might have changed in light of the reauthorization of the Magnuson Act. Is this going to produce different requests for information? Basically, are there things that we may have to look at now that weren't on the list before? And we would ask you to continue to think about that. And if you have any suggestions, either forward them to the committee or to the appropriate plan development team or species committee. Finally, we had a number of other items that we worked on. We were asked, the regional office staff was asked to provide general background on timelines for experimental permits. We reaffirmed that we will be reviewing research set-aside projects. There are more of them all the time. Currently, there's only the sea scallop ones that we have to worry about, but there will be herring and monkfish that will be coming to us shortly. We had a discussion on the development of a consistent approach with respect to research steering committee review and RSA-funded project results, since they are a little bit different. We're going to try and provide some consistency so that we basically look at everything through the same lens. We did ask if people could communicate to us if we were going to be given additional responsibilities given the new research-related mandates in the reauthorization of the Magnuson Act. I assume that'll be forthcoming over the coming months. And we discussed scheduling a future discussion about requirements for data availability on the part of project PIs, particularly focusing on location, format, and time frame for data archiving. We are receiving a very large amount of information. This information will have probably use for a number of years, and we've got to find some consistent way of archiving it so that it'll be retrievable and useful to scientists in the future. And if nobody has any further questions, that will conclude my report.
Any other questions or comments for Dave? Anyone in the audience? Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. I noticed in that the committee was going to take a look at the process for experimental fishing permits, and I also noticed that the Magnuson Act requires some sort of NIMS review of experimental fishing permits over the next 6 months or whatever. What is the process that's going to occur, whether it's within the Council Research Steering Committee, NIMS, or together in the region, to look at the experimental fishing permit process?
Well, it's being looked at nationally, not within the region. And I'm not sure even if I know everyone's going through a course in outlining all the things that need to be done as a result of the reauthorization. It's on the list. I can't remember who has the lead for it, but I'm not aware that anything has started at this point, and I expect when it does, it will involve the regions, but I haven't heard anything yet.
Thank you. We had a meeting, I think it was council-sponsored, Chris Kellogg had chaired about 2 years ago to look at the various issues associated with the research program. Is there any intent to follow up or move forward with the results of that particular meeting? It seemed to have disappeared.
Ron, when was that meeting? Or Pat, do you...
That meeting, Ron, or for anybody else for that matter, was specific to the scallop RSA, and there were numbers of issues that were discussed. And I believe that Harry Mears from the regional office followed up and made some adjustments, whether the entire list was covered and things had been followed to their logical conclusion, I'm not sure. But a lot of that stuff was followed up on the regional office, and it wasn't just the experimental fishery permit part of it. There was lots of stuff with the scallop RSA. Sorry, got a candy in my mouth now. but a lot of that stuff was followed up on already. The other thing for Ron is that a research steering committee asked for a summary of issues associated with delays of people possibly getting their possible delays, and there's a tracking process for experimental fishery permits, and the regional office agreed to come back to the research steering committee and give us the findings of the tracking process. Was there a delay? What happened with particular permits, or were there extenuating circumstances and so forth? Just for a review at this point, it's not really connected with the national NIMS review of the experimental fishery permit process. So there are kind of two different things going on, and we can find out what else happened after that meeting a couple of years ago and see if there's anything else to follow up on as well.
Okay, thanks, Pat. Anyone else? Dave, you're all set, right?
Yep, that concludes my report.
Okay. Now moving to ground fish. Tom, do you need 5 or 10 minutes to set everything up? Okay, we'll take a 5-minute break. The ground fish discussion.